Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Only 33 women are CEOs of Fortune 1000 companies. Two of them are sisters, who together run companies with more than 33,000 employees and $11 billion in sales. This hour on Point, two sisters on corporate America, life at the top, a woman's way up, and what they're thinking about Occupy Wall Street and We Are the 99%. Later in the hour, we'll have Occupy Wall Street face-to-face with our two CEOs and see what we can all learn. You can join the conversation. Do you want to applaud these women, ask them how they did it, put Occupy Wall Street questions to them? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. When we booked this show, we didn't know that this would be the soundtrack to a lot of media coverage right now. But look at unemployment and income and a whole lot more in this country, and I guess nobody should be surprised. It's an opportunity to get a unique angle on this right now and much more. Joining me now from New York is Denise Morrison. On August 1st, she was named CEO of Campbell Soup, ranked 312 on the Fortune 500 list of biggest American corporations. She was one of just 14 women CEOs in the most recent Fortune 500 listing. Denise Morrison, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us from New York is Maggie Wildrotter. She is CEO of telecom company Frontier Communications. It sells voice, data, internet, and television services, mostly in rural markets, nearly $4 billion in revenue last year. Headed into the Fortune 500 most likely this year, she's the boss, and she and Denise are sisters. Maggie, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here.
So let me ask you two, just right off the bat, why are there so few at the very tip top? We know why there were so few 50 years ago, or you name it, but here we are in 2011. We've got more women in college now than men, women crowding into medical schools and law schools and business schools. Why, at the tip top, and I'll come first to you, Maggie, why do you think there are just 14 out of 500 or 33 out of 1,000 female CEOs in this country?
Well, it's a great question, and I wish there was one answer that we could all point to so we could fix the issue and move on. But I think there are many issues. One is women in the workforce also have other responsibilities, like raising children, sometimes taking care of parents. They're usually the priority caretaker in their families. And for some women, it sort of sidetracks them from continuing to move forward with their careers. I think there's also an issue of women getting into operating and line jobs where you really need to have that profit and loss or P&L responsibility that gives you the capability to run a company operationally. And I think that women have to take a risk if they're in a specific field like finance or human resources and move out of those areas, take a job in their companies or other companies that give them operational experience as well. And last but certainly not least, I think getting into the C-suite, getting a pipeline of women that can be considered for those positions that are working directly for a CEO that gives them an opportunity for a shot at the top job.
Denise, you're there at Campbell Soup, and of course they make a lot more than soup. You've got V8 beverages and Pepperidge Farm and
That's
SpaghettiOs,
right.
All kinds of stuff selling all over the world. You've worked your way around a lot of food companies and then up there. Same question to you. I mean, Sister Maggie's taken a piece out of it here, but what can you add to why?
Yeah,
we don't
I can build on that, Tom. You know, when you think about the workforce today, 50% of the entry level are women, and that critical mass is building through the middle management ranks. The challenge is at the top. And I think it involves senior women doing much more mentoring. Maggie and I are very involved with mentoring younger women. I do believe there is a paradigm that some women think that if they just do a good job, they'll get promoted, whereas there's more to it. You need to build networks. You need to build advocacy. And teaching women these skills is really, really important. And I also believe that women need to take a strategic approach to their career and not just let it happen to them. That involves setting destination goals and getting the proper experiences to achieve those goals.
Can we get just some plain facts on the table here? What about with the two of you, Maggie and Denise? Did you have families and these big careers, or did you choose one or the other? Denise, first to you, kids plus or not?
Kids plus. I have two wonderful daughters and a great husband. And my family is very, very important to me, and I learned over the years to lead an integrated life.
An integrated life, that's an important phrase to you. I read here about you getting, you know, back in the day, your daughters are in their early 30s now, but they're sort of high school term papers faxed to you at hotels around the country.
So yes,
you
can give moms 2 cents. Before the internet.
Right? Maggie, what about you, family and career or not?
Yes, I actually have a wonderful husband of 34 years who, by the way, was introduced to me by my sister Denise.
Oh. The heartthrob of Tackanesse Beach.
And I have two wonderful sons, 24 and 27. So I basically had to do the balance, but I know I would not be in the position I'm in today if it wasn't for my husband stepping up and really taking a primary role in raising our kids.
Was he a house husband or more responsible for the children as you pursued your executive path?
He was. He was a Mr. Mom before it was cool back in the 80s. So, and again, he's my best friend and my partner and has always been proud of what I'm doing in the workplace because I have a passion for what I do and I love it. And he's always been very supportive of that.
And then,
Tom, I think that people think about work-life balance as perfect equilibrium. It really isn't. It's a balancing act, and you want it to come out balanced at the end. And that's why this concept of integration, I believe, is so important because, you know, daily you're setting different priorities depending upon what happens in life.
Put it all together.
Just to build on that very quickly, we also, Denise and I, are also very good at compartmentalizing. You know, when we're with our family, we're moms and we're wives. When we're in the business world, we're CEOs, so you have to play different roles based upon the different roles you have in life as well.
Speaking of family and career, let's look at that, because these days, you know, issues of equity and opportunity are very much in the news. Just in these last couple of weeks, really exploding. People around this country expressing a lot of pain, and of course, Tea Party before that, about sort of the divisions and inequalities in this country. But speak about your own background. You're two of four sisters, all ambitious and accomplished. What was it, do you think, in your family, Maggie, Denise, that sort of gave you the footing that leaves you, you know, not that it's all in the first blast off and propulsion, but nevertheless, that's a big, important piece. What was it in your early family life that may have contributed to where you are now? Denise, I'll come first to you.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've been blessed with parents that really established very high standards in our family. My dad was incredibly involved with us and stressed the importance of a good education. We literally had to do things like book reports once a week for him as we went on family outings to the library. We had job jars that they would assign chores so that we would earn our allowance. It wouldn't just be an entitlement. And we could barter our chores, but we had to have them finished by the end of the week. Those are a few examples of things that they did as we were children that taught us some real life skills.
Of course, Maggie, you could model in a way on your father as well. He was an AT&T executive, as I recall. And from what I'm reading here, you all had, speaking of P&L, I mean, you kind of talked about profit and loss at the family kitchen table as kids.
We did. Actually, we would have dinner with our dad when he would come home from work, and we would sit down at the dinner table, and he would talk about his day. He would kind of take us through what he did on a day-to-day basis at work. So we were very comfortable in understanding a lot of things that go on in the business world at a young age, and it was very interactive. We could ask questions, and he was also working on a lot of new products for AT&T at the time, things like the Princess phone and the Touchtone phone. Call waiting, call forwarding, and we always had the products in our house first. So we were also test cases for the products. Yeah. So it was a great experience for us to grow up in a household where our father actually took us to work in the 70s you know, before it was popular to take your daughters to work.
Now, in all fairness, he had no sons, so he did get a male Labrador Retriever.
But you were the girls, and it left you with a kind of comfort with that realm, and clearly a kind of ambition there as well. I wonder about your comfort level today as anxiety is cranked up in this country over the economy, over inequality. And here you are sitting, Denise, you know, $3 or $4 million in compensation last year, Maggie, $8 million last year. You know the kind of cries that are in the streets right now. And I'm curious, I mean, we've got two big CEOs sitting with us. Denise, I'll come first to you on this one. How does that leave you feeling, thinking? Do you feel besieged or kind of just looking on curiously at what's going on with Occupy Wall Street and the rest?
Well, I mean, it's a really multifaceted issue. I mean, you're talking about pay, but you're also talking about Wall Street protests. You know, suffice it to say that this recession has been very long and difficult for consumers. And we can see in our business how the economy has impacted consumer shopping habits. I mean, they're sticking to lists. They're being very disciplined and only buying what they need. So it is indeed a challenging time. And I believe that people do want economic recovery, but quite frankly, corporations play an important role in growing the economy and creating a better world. And for me, I look at this great company that I have the honor to lead. For me, it's about providing affordable, nourishing food to people and while giving back to the community, and our company does a lot of that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with two tip-top CEO sisters about women climbing the ladder, life at the top, and the big corporate critique out there right now of Occupy Wall Street. Denise Morrison is with us on August 1st. She was named CEO of Campbell Soup. She's been there since 2003. It is a big Fortune 500 company, thousands and thousands of employees, all kinds of products probably on your shelves at home. Woman in charge for the first time in the country's history. And with us is her sister, Maggie Wilderotter. She's CEO of Frontier Communications. They sell a lot of voice and data and internet television services and the rest mostly in rural markets. Got a big chunk of Verizon has just come under their fold. They'll probably be in the Fortune 500 as well next year. Very few women CEOs in those ranks. They're here with us today. Let's go right to John in Davidson, North Carolina. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I work for a large consulting company, and I've been tasked with presenting some information to my coworkers locally. That information is that we have a very low ratio of female to male consultants and even much lower at the higher levels. I wondered if your guests could provide some insight as to how to break that information. And the other thing about it is there's a goal set from the top level to improve that ratio. And so how do I reach this issue with coworkers who haven't even thought about this issue? And, in fact, one very progressive coworker of mine even felt that it was uncomfortable to talk about that issue.
John, we'll pick it right up with Denise and Maggie. You know, if you're in a situation that's way out of whack, and here's John, he's a guy, but he wants to know, how do you raise the issue that gender balance or something closer to it in the company, and how do you sell it? Maggie, begin to give him some advice here, if you can.
Well, I do think that recognizing there is an issue is the first step. And I think, John, the fact that you know, you're willing to bring it up, you're willing to take it on as an issue to even have those discussions says a lot about you and who you are. I do think that if you maybe get together and talk about the issue without having the answers, where you can get input from your coworkers and try to figure out how do we increase the pipeline? How do we get more women into the consulting workforce? Where are the areas that we can recruit from in order to get women to be excited about this field and to have a more balanced equation? And I would say the other thing, if you're a consultant, look at the companies that you consult to and look at how their makeup is. And I'm sure having a female perspective and a point of view that represents a lot of consumers in this country or in, you know, global companies, it's always good to have that balance. So it's good business as well.
Denise, how do you make the case beyond fairness, which is very important, but that it matters just in maybe P&L terms?
Yeah, well, diversity in a company doesn't happen by chance. It absolutely takes a leadership imperative, and you need to declare that you're going to become a more diverse organization because it's good for business. And as Maggie pointed out, the consumer is diverse for any business, whether you're B2B or B2C, and therefore it just makes good business sense.
But how does the fact that you're a woman at the top of Campbell's Soup, does it change how your soup tastes? Does it change how the, you know, V8 pours?
Well, I think we have a high quality and a high standard at Campbell's, whether you're male or female, and I'm very proud of that. But I do think that the rich perspective of diversity of thought is really, really important. And it's not just male, female. It's also race and ethnicity, different cultures. Food is a very cultural experience. And so we believe that it's brought our business to a better place. I would recommend that Catalyst also does research in companies, and they helped us enormously a decade ago when we were facing the same issue that was just presented.
Catalyst, this is a group that looks at gender equity in the corporate world. John, thanks for your call. Let's get one from Newburg, Indiana. Kim, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
First of all, I congratulate these two women. I think it's fabulous. I am calling from the perspective of a wife, a spouse. I'm a stay-at-home mother of my husband works in the telecommunications industry and has all his life. As a result of the economic situation, we find ourselves in the unhappy situation where he is working across the country from our family, and we have three small children. One of the things that we found very interesting is he's able to come home maybe one long weekend a month, and he is working directly for a female boss and in a very male-dominated industry, both engineering and telecommunications. And he has tried desperately to propose a very mutually beneficial work schedule such that he could still see his family more than one long weekend a month.
Was she sympathetic?
No. And what we have found more often than not, and this is where the comment may come in from these wonderful women, more often than not, when he has worked for female bosses, especially in the engineering or telecommunications industries, that the women are less accommodating for family situations, like our situation. My husband is on the West Coast, we're in the Midwest, and he would love to come home and see his kids, and he's a wonderful dad. But more often than not, he gets the comment of, what's so important about going back to see your family?
Hey, Kim,
and
Kim, I will put that to them, but you're a woman watching this. How do you interpret it, Kim, first?
I hate to say this. I used to work in the corporate world, and then I had decided to stay home with our children, especially because we had to move around a lot with telecommunications.
Yep.
But I hate to say this, but I think in some senses, female executives that we've run into have sold their female soul, so to speak. The things that make them uniquely women and female, like mothers and grandmothers. And more often than not, he runs into that it's more difficult to try to negotiate family time with women bosses than it is men. And it's kind of like I hate to sound stereotypical, but it's like, oh my gosh, what's happened? We've just flipped, everything's just flipped upside on its head.
And Maggie, Kim, excuse me, but let me put it to them. Maggie, you're in telecommunications. You're a woman. You're the CEO. What do you say?
Well, I think you can't categorize everyone into one batch and say everybody acts the same way. Again, I've got 15,200 employees in thousands of communities around the country. And Kim, I have over 500,000 customers in Indiana. It's one of my largest states where we do business. So maybe you should have your husband give us a call and he might be able to get closer to home. But we do try to provide for balance. I think that it's important to model that at the top. I try to make sure that I lead more of a balanced life. I spend time with my kids. I spend time with my husband and my family. But I also know in business there are sacrifices you have to make and there are trade-offs. You know, my primary place I call home is in the West Coast, yet I work out of Stamford, Connecticut, so I do a lot of commuting. And I know that you have to make those trade-offs at times in your career, but I always try to be sensitive to the issues, and we do try to be accommodating when we can. And I've tried to do that throughout my career. A lot of people that work for me at Frontier today have worked for me in other jobs throughout their careers because they do know that I'm looking out for them as well as them looking out for our company, our shareholders, our customers, and other employees.
Denise, I'm sure the phrase from Kim's call that sticks with me, maybe other listeners as well, but, you know, they had to sell their female souls to do these jobs. Have you felt, do you know what she means? Have you felt anything like that impulse? Have you seen it? Or is that, what do you say?
I haven't really had that experience. I actually bring my heart and soul to work to make our workplace very conducive for great productivity, great results, but attention to family and community. That is part of our culture. And so I think the issue here is when you join a company, you need to really look at the culture and make sure the values are compatible with your own values. One of the things that we've done at Campbell's is we've done a lot of work in the area of flexibility, you know, to control group meeting times. In the summer, we have summer hours for people that have to get their work done so they don't have to spend their weekends necessarily doing it. So we've put in a lot of different things into our culture. And I would say we're a very family-friendly environment, but we still have a high standard of delivering results. I don't think those are incompatible.
Kim, good luck to you and your family there out of Newburgh, Indiana. Let's go to Morgan in Bolton, Vermont. Morgan, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
I guess I just wanted to comment about the Occupy Wall Street that you were talking about earlier. I was in the car driving home when I heard the gentleman who had the trucking firm.
This is in a different hour, but saying, you know, they should just get out and work.
Yeah, and he seems to think that everyone who's part of the Occupy Wall Street is somehow looking for a handout, and I think that is so far from the truth. Sorry, my toddler wants to be on the air.
Good, welcome. He's a star.
But I just feel that it's so far from the truth. We don't want a handout. What we want is equality. And so it means that the movement is so much more than just about, you know, being a Democrat or being a Republican. We just want equality for everyone. And I see it here all the time. I mean, I've been unemployed for 2 years now. It's really hard to go out in this economy. And, you know, knowing that you have a little baby and people are like, oh, well, I'm going to hire her. And then, you know, she's going to have to stay home with a sick child and there's going to be daycare problems. And
and
so we see, you know, like here in Vermont, there is the FDA doing raids on these tiny little organic farms for selling raw milk. But then huge companies can make thousands of people sick and people die from contaminated food that is only contaminated from their own. I'm trying to find the right word because.
Well, Morgan, let me ask you then. When
upset about this.
I hear that. Let me just ask you. We have two very successful women here. They're CEOs of big companies. In your situation, unemployed, young baby, do you look at them and say, "You go," you know, congratulations, or are you thinking, "Geez, what's? Why not me?"
I think for people who can make it work that way, that it's a wonderful thing. But I think that right now, the way our society is geared, it's all about business, you know, about these companies getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and that somehow, you know, if these companies aren't making billions and billions of dollars, that they'll somehow fail, like that if they aren't making billions of dollars, that they'll somehow go away. And I don't think that's what our country needs. I think you can be successful without succumbing to greed. I guess that's.
Yep. Morgan, I appreciate your call. We're at this interesting moment. We've had many years of kind of mainstream embrace of success, people's success, often in corporate terms. And now, in a tough economy, you've got questions. Some of them are in the streets. We've got two big CEOs, women with us this hour, and we want to sort of take that head on. Denise, Maggie, if you'd be good enough, stand by for just a moment. Joining us from Brooklyn is Julie Fry. She's been very active in the Occupy Wall Street protests in New York. She's a public defender with the Legal Aid Society in Brooklyn. Julie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So here we are. We've got Occupy Wall Street in the streets. We've got these two women in the, you know, executive halls of power. Do you congratulate them, Julie? Do you want to challenge them with the sort of, you know, corporate critique that we're hearing from Occupy Wall Street? What are you thinking?
I mean, I think that what we need is for for, I think it's strange to congratulate people in the period that we're in for being very wealthy when so many people are suffering. And I think what Occupy Wall Street is about is sort of giving the wealthy, the bankers, you know, what for, so to speak, and taking the conversation directly to them and challenging them, you know, instead of just begging the rich to sort of do the right thing by the majority of people in this country, to take our own power back and to demand justice.
So we've got two big CEOs. How do you challenge them?
Well, I mean, I think for one thing, you know, there are, and understanding that Occupy Wall Street is a leaderless movement, it's sort of still in the process of developing, and a lot of people have a range of ideas about how we do such things. One of the things I would like to personally see is a moratorium on layoffs for the, you know, these two CEOs. Maybe they can commit to not laying off any of their workers. I know that Campbell's laid off, you know, about 700 people this summer. Maybe they could hire them back. That would be a good start if they're interested in speaking to, you know, the needs of the people of this country that are really suffering right now and not seeing a lot of justice coming from the wealthy in this country that seem to be benefiting from this crisis.
We'll spend some time and we'll dig in with this, but let's just pick up this sort of big picture here. I mean, first to you, Denise, what about, I mean, being a CEO in a time of such economic difficulty when you've got some people loudly now raising fundamental questions about fairness? Now, you touched on it earlier and you pointed at the, you know, consumers and their difficulties sometimes buying the very products that you're providing. What about the bigger picture? Does it make it, does it make you think twice about the system you're working in, or just commit to working more effectively in it? How do you think about it, Denise?
Well, I think that that it motivates me to prove out that corporations do play an important role in growing the economy and in creating jobs and in creating a better world. I can only speak for Campbell's, but we take that responsibility very, very seriously, whether it's in the vein of offering healthier products from whole grains and vegetable nutrition, or that are lower in calories, have reduced sodium for people with special dietary needs, whether it's putting in solar fields at our plants so that we can be much more efficient with energy, whether it's reducing the amount of packaging so that we are being responsible for the environment. I mean, last year, for example, we collected more than 1 billion pounds of food through Stamp Out Hunger, which is a big initiative we have, and donated it to food banks. And, you know, I'm just saying that there is another side to the story here in terms of corporations. Yes, they're in business to make a profit, but a lot of corporations are reinvesting that profit in the communities and for very, very important causes.
Though we've seen a lot of capital tied up and not being invested right now. And what about Julie's direct challenge? You know, could you commit to not laying off people? Because, you know, if they're laid off in this environment, they've got not much where to go.
The best thing for job security is growth. And if, in fact, consumers continue to buy our products and we grow, we'll be able to create more jobs for people. And that is my commitment.
But as a CEO, here's a citizen saying, commit to not laying off. How does that hit your ear?
I think I just told you.
No, I mean, you kind of did. But does that sound unrealistic to you? Is there any way to do that?
Well, I mean, layoffs are not fun to do. I mean, they're very, very difficult, and they're very difficult decisions. And every once in a while, companies have to make them, and we do. But I think that the responsible perspective is that if you're driving growth, then you'll be able to create more jobs, and that's what the American system's all about. It's, you know, very few countries in the world can match our freedom and our ability to create economic opportunity in this country.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with two tip-top CEO sisters about women climbing the ladder, life at the top, and the big corporate critique in the streets these days of Occupy Wall Street. Denise Morrison is with us. She is CEO since August 1st of Campbell Soup, great big company with a lot more than soup that it's selling all over the world. And Maggie Wilderotter is with us. She's CEO of Frontier Communications. They sell voice and data, internet and television services, mostly in rural markets. Campbell Soup, Fortune 500 company. Frontier Communications, probably on its way to that already Fortune 1000 and getting a lot bigger all the time. Denise, here's one from BHA in Vermont. Asked me to ask you to push to cut down on the salt at Campbell and that initiative. He writes, or she writes, they have a lot of products that those of us who need to watch their blood pressure just cannot eat. Most prepackaged foods are way over salted. Where's all that stand, Denise?
Well, actually, and this has been a personal passion of mine, that Campbell has been an industry leader in sodium reduction. In fact, we offer now over 200 great-tasting foods that have been reduced in sodium. We work diligently with the American Heart Association to meet those specifications. And this is inclusive of 90 soups that have heart-healthy levels of sodium or reduced sodium. And we call that under our Campbell's Healthy Request soups. But we also have reduced sodium V8, Prego, and bread, Pepperidge Farm bread.
I know from reading that you've been really active on that. I also know, and it's interesting how you respond to this, you've taken some heat from that, from some industry analysts big in the food industry who say, cut the salt, you're going to cut sales. Stop pushing that, Denise Morrison. How do you respond to that?
Well, we're not stopping pushing it. We are actively engaged in sodium reduction, mm-hmm. but we also recognize that health and wellness means different things to different people. So our portfolio is really designed to provide people with great tasting choices to meet the latest dietary guideline recommendations. So, for example, we're with our Pepperidge Farm breads, we make our breads with all whole grains. Our V8 has three full servings of vegetables in our red juice. In our V8 V-Fusion, it's a full serving of fruit and a full serving of vegetables. And we also have offerings that have lower calories and, as I talked about, reduced sodium. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's about satisfying consumers and helping people meet their lifestyle needs and offering them enough choices to do that. And the food has to taste good.
But take us in, we've got you here, and just take us on the inside. I don't know if you've had this experience, but you get like industry analysts on a call with the CEO of Campbell Soup challenging you on that. And what do you say to them if they do? If they say, you know, Ms. Morrison, you would sell more soup if it had more salt in it. How do you make the argument? We don't get the opportunity to hear how that might go, but you know how it goes.
Well, I mean, I've gotten into discussions with analysts on our strategies and in particular this one. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, suffice it to say, I explained it to them the same way that I've explained it to you. In a food company, you need to start with the consumer. And our goal is to provide them with great-tasting, nourishing food. And sometimes that involves reducing sodium, and sometimes that's vegetable nutrition or whole grains. And sometimes it's indulgent food. So, you know, I think that what I can guarantee is that we offer a sufficient variety for those consumers that need to meet those lifestyle needs.
Are you worried when you ratchet down the salt? And again, we know it's healthy, but are you worried that competitors will say, hey, there's an opportunity. We'll hold ours right where it is and, you know, get that salty, yummy taste and ride sales on it?
You know, reducing sodium is the right thing to do. So we'll mm-hmm. continue on that work, and we'll continue to work with the culinary aspect to make sure we're improving the taste.
That's great. Jessica in Nashville, Tennessee, you're on with Maggie Wilderotter and Denise Morrison. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. First, I wanted to congratulate the women on their corporate success and acknowledge all the good that they can do with the power of their position. Mm-hmm. Also, I was just wondering, with all the unemployment and the income disparity in this country with the inequality, if they feel like personally maybe if their incomes are out of whack and too high.
Let's pick it up. Jessica, we've got that there. And another one here online, Janelle says, you know, congratulations on achieving positions you seemingly were groomed for. Goes on to say, but please give the rationalizations that you hear from other CEOs and executives for the huge pay and perks. Pay and perks are a big deal in this country now. They didn't used to be so big, but they are now. How do you think about that? How do you talk about it? How do you feel about it? And there you are, Maggie. You know, $8 million last year, that's a lot of money in compensation. There was a long time when it barely got questioned, but in a down economy, you hear the kind of questions that are out there. How do you personally think about the critique that's pretty widespread now?
Well, let me start by saying, the proxies all say $8 million, but the majority of that is in stock that's earned over, multiple years.
Fair enough.
It's not money that's in my pocket today.
Yeah.
And I have to perform as CEO in order to get it.
Mm-hmm.
We did triple the size of our company last year, so I also got an increase last year because we changed the paradigm with a very transformational transaction. But with that said, I think you have to make sure that that pay is fair, but it's also aligned with what is the responsible thing to do. I have a board of directors that I work for, a compensation committee, a governance committee, that do the right type of homework to make sure that that my pay is fair. I am not the highest paid executive in telecom. I am the only woman running a large telecom company.
Mm-hmm.
But, I want to flip this over to what we can do personally as CEOs of companies in order to help the economy, to help people that are unemployed. And I sort of come from the philosophy that we do what we can based upon what we control. I have a company with 15,200 employees who have families. My goal is to make sure they keep jobs. Part of the way of doing that is to be active in our communities, to invest where we do business. And I'm in rural communities around the country. I'm not in big cities. And so we're either sometimes the number one or number two employer in the communities that we're in. So it's very important for us to give back and to make sure those communities stay healthy. My workforce is 100% U.S.-based. When I did this acquisition with Verizon, I brought 500 jobs back from India. We don't outsource jobs. I have a priority hiring program for vets coming back from Afghanistan and from Iraq. We've hired over 150 in just the last several months. Mm. That's important for us. I have my second largest call center in the United States is work at home. So we try to give our employees the opportunity to have that work-life balance, still work for us, but also to do that from their homes. And last but certainly not least, I am bringing broadband to rural America. If I think about a catalyst for people to create economic value,
mm-hmm.
it's about having the tools and technology and capabilities in small communities just like you have in big cities like Boston or New York. That's important to me. My company has invested $750 million in capital this year to put people to give people broadband. And we've turned on over 466,000 new customer homes with broadband in rural America.
And so, that's access to a big, important part of the economy these days when you bring
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. So my capital's not sitting on the sidelines. My capital is getting put to work in rural America. And I think that's what's important. I've hired 1,000 new employees in the last 12 months in these Verizon properties that Verizon had not been investing in for a number of years. I've brought jobs to those communities, and we'll continue to do that.
We've got it. And Denise, at Campbell Soup, we've got a sense of where you're pushing to do things with employment and with food quality. But what about this essential question of fairness? Your sister mentions, it's fair. You've got a compensation committee on boards. Every board would have that. But, of course, that's fairness compared to other CEOs. And the question that's being raised in the streets is fairness compared to the country at large, where so many people are either don't have jobs or don't have well-paying jobs. How do you think about that as a CEO, Denise?
Yeah, well, first of all executive pay needs to be linked to performance. And 70% of my pay is linked to the performance of the company.
Mm-hmm.
And my goals that are aligned with the board of directors are all about driving growth. And that growth will secure the company for the 19,000 people that work for Campbell's. And that's a very, very big responsibility. And so I love it. I mean, I'm committed to it. We're revving up innovation to create new news and goods and services for consumers to make our company grow and flourish so that we can add jobs. And that's really important to me. And so I do take that very seriously. And there is a very different level of responsibility for a CEO these days. you really, you know, the people in the company are looking for the leadership of the CEO to make sure that the company is increasing value.
Julie Fry with Occupy Wall Street, you're listening here.
Yes.
You hear the numbers, 3, 4 million, 8 million, they're big. Of course, there are a lot of big CEO salaries in this country. And you hear these two CEOs talking about their goals, how they justify those numbers, and they are required to justify them by their boards. How do you respond to this whole picture, Julie?
Right. So I think just as a whole, I mean, I don't know the financial, you know, statistics for these particular companies, but I know that corporate companies in this country are sitting on like $2 trillion in retained earnings that they're not investing back into the community. They're not hiring people back with. And there's a broader systemic problem. They certainly have enough money sitting on the sidelines to put people to work, and that's not what they're doing with it. And, you know, whether or not these companies, yes, their goal is to grow, but whether they grow by getting rid of people or adding people, it all depends on what's best for their bottom line, what's best for their stockholders. They're not doing it for the good of the people. They're doing it for the benefit of their stockholders. So if it's in their stockholders' interest to lay people off, then that's what they're going to do.
So what would you propose? What would be the standard by which you would judge their success?
So, I mean, I think that, well, I'm not interested in whether or not, you know, they are successful or not. I'm really interested in the several million people in this country that are unemployed, that are getting their homes foreclosed, that are in, you know, debt up to their ears. And I think what Occupy Wall Street is about is not about making Wall Street more successful and, you know, having like some sort of compromise with them, but about realizing that the 99% of us that actually make stuff every day, that make the soup, that, you know, actually, you know, make the products that people buy in stores every day, that we're powerful, that we have power, and that we need to demand justice. We need to demand the rights that we're entitled to. We need to demand that some of this wealth that the top 1% is sitting on be used for our needs.
We'll pick that up. And one more here. Mike in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mike, thanks for calling.
Hi. Again, you know, I don't want to personally attack anybody, but to me it was very bizarre when you asked about, you know, what they're doing as far as jobs and creating jobs. And then you even kind of pressed a little bit more on the issue. And the standard answer seems to be, well, you know, we're creating food banks for the community, and our production numbers, we have to increase that, and talking about the customer and the consumer. And what we're talking about is it just sounds so out of touch that again, it's all about numbers, and it's not about human beings. And it's, you know, human resources is not just a label on a door. Now, I wanted to ask if you could answer the question, when you are successful, how many people have you hired back? And it seems to me that most corporations in the business to make money, yes, for stockholders in the company, when they do increase profits, they don't hire people back. And it seems to be this tug of war. And what about salary? How often have you increased salaries for your workers? Not how many food banks have you built? How much? And let me ask you really quickly, too, are these tax write-offs when you talk about donating back to the community? Are you really giving that away, or is that another incentive? Is that a tax write-off for you?
Mike, we got it. Let's see what we can pick up here. I want to go to the big sort of frame first that Julie has put out there. And Maggie, let me come to you. I mean, you hear the cry of Occupy Wall Street. You know, we are the 99%. There's a lot of attention paid to how much wealth and annual income is concentrated in the top 1% now. As a business person, do you worry about that economic structure that we have kind of moved toward over time, pulling away the basis for the success of your business itself, Maggie, when, you know, you've got perhaps a maldistribution of wealth and income?
Well, I do think that giving Americans the opportunity to go to work, to create value, to take care of themselves is a right that we all want in America. And I'm worried that we have disparities in the country, that we have a lot of people that are unemployed, and that we have to put our economic engine to work to create the capabilities for people to earn their way and have their life in control. And when you're out of work and you're on the sidelines and you're frustrated because you can't find jobs, it's a really tough environment to be in. So what I try to do is, again, concentrate where I can make a difference, and that's with my own company. I look back at 2008 when we first hit the recession. What we did in our company, and I did this too, is all employees, including me, we all took 12 furlough days. It saved 500 jobs from us, you know, laying off people. I have a number of my employees are union represented on my front lines. It's close to 85%. We do give raises every year to our employees. We have very low turnover. Our employees are very happy working for Frontier. They tell us that in surveys. They tell us that through their work ethic and their focus on customers. And as I said, I placed a big bet. I tripled the size of this company by buying assets from Verizon that investments were not being made. And against the tide, I'm investing in those markets, and I have created 1,000 new jobs in the last 12 months. So I'm just trying to do my part because I know that's an area that I can control and make a difference.
Denise, we've just got 20 seconds here, but do you worry about the system when we have inequality? Is it a problem for you?
Well, I mean, I am very, very conscious of the unemployment in this country and just determined to do what I can as a CEO to drive growth and create jobs and fuel growth. And I really, really believe, and we demonstrated sincerely at Campbell's, that you can make a profit and you can make a difference in the world. And we will continue to do that. And we are raising salaries and we do give full benefits to people. And our people are genuinely happy at Campbell's. So I know there's more to do, and I commit to do my part.
Well, here's the start of a conversation. It's not over, but we're grateful to the two of you. Denise Morrison with Campbell Soup, Maggie Wilderotter with Frontier Communications, Julie Fry with Occupy Wall Street. Our thanks to each of you. Thank you very much. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.